Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich. You are in for a real treat today. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. Lee Cote is with us. He is the executive pastor of in charge of ministry and media at a fantastic church called The Crossing in Las Vegas. And so, Lee, welcome to the show.
Rich, good to be with you and just to be able to pop in and get to meet all your listeners as well as get to chat with you.
Oh, I'm excited for this. This is going to be great. I wonder if you could kind of start today by just giving a sense of the church. Give us a bit of the sense of the Crossing Christian Church and kind of if people were to arrive this weekend, a bit of the history, and then tell us about your role.
Sure. The Crossing has been around for 18 years. It was planted in the fall of 2000. Was a partner plant, so it came out of Canyon Ridge Christian Church here in Las Vegas and was launched pretty large. And so I kid our senior leader a lot saying, you know, you're not that guy that sat in the living room with 15 people. I think the first weekend there were 700 or 800 people, and it settled down to about 500, and then just steady growth. We've never experienced massive growth relatively, but just steady growth, and have tracked obviously with sort of the story of Las Vegas and the narrative of Las Vegas and learning how to do ministry in Las Vegas with its unique cultural challenges. Went through the economic downturn in the middle of the 2000s after building a building. I remember those meetings we would have as an executive team where our finance guy would push a piece of paper across the table and say, this is how many weeks we have left to stay open if these numbers don't hit. And we literally would have those conversations. And it was a dramatic time, but it also taught us a lot. And so we're in our 18th year, and we have a staff of just over 50 individuals. We run fairly lean for a church of our size that on the weekends will average a little over 5,000. 5,000. Part of our story is just really learning to move from survival mode, even as a church plant, to discovering how God wants to use us specifically and significantly in our city. And you might say, well, you started with 500 people, you know, why is survival even an issue? But I think any new church deals with that, right?
Yeah, totally.
Just that idea of, you know, what do we do next and all those things. And so the financial economic crisis that we all experienced actually was a catalyst for us to really look outside of that mentality and to begin to reshape some of our ministry at that time.
That's cool. You know, as an outsider looking in, there's a number of things about your story I find, you know, fascinating. One of them, you know, has been, you know, it seems like, you know, your church from a culture point of view and from kind of the unique narrative that you're weaving or that has been woven in your church, you know, seems to be, you know, a key part of what's happening there, a key part of what God's using. How do you think about culture and from your seat, how are you, you know, wrestling with that and then thinking about how you're kind of propelling forward that culture as you grow and continue to reach more people?
I think part of my role specifically now, just working in that second chair in our structure, is really very much a culture sort of engineer in some ways. It's not in my job description, but it tends to be that way. I'm a big West Wing fan, so anybody that goes back and watches the West Wing, and I've found over the last few years that my leadership style has become what I call West Wing-ish, which means I wake up a lot of days and don't necessarily have 100 things to do, but I walk the hallways and I navigate culture, try to get people unstuck, deal with conflict, or how do we get more collaboration and communication across the ways and across the different departments. So that works internally, but culturally as a church, one of the things that shifted for us is just we are in a unique culture and it's over-discussed, but Las Vegas is really a unique bird, and it is actually shifted, almost like that idea of, you know, we went through that period where everything's new, and it still is in Vegas. You know, we blow things up when it's 10 years old, and it's interesting how that mentality leaks into the mentality of those that call Vegas home.
Oh, interesting.
And so you find yourself as a faith leader in the city having to really tackle ministry and make an impact with that in mind, that people get bored really quickly and they need to be re-engaged rather frequently, pretty transient as a city. And so we have, it's changed a bit because people tend to stay longer, but they still are short timers. And so we have a window, and our ministry has to be designed to address that. We don't have people for 15 years. We don't have those kind of processes.
Right.
So that's been a cultural challenge for us.
Yeah. So to give us a kind of, when you dive into that a little bit, what does that look like? How have you dealt with that? You know, the transient nature, the kind of, you know, that I can imagine that's got some really unique aspects to it. What, how have you dealt with that?
Well, I think like everybody else, we've begun to have a lot of conversations around engagement and connection. We've spent a lot of time as an executive team, which is our tier one team, really looking at how do we move people from the street to the seat, and then how do we move people step by step through that process. And we're constantly re-engineering the top of what we call our engagement funnel, as far as a growth plan. And we're constantly tweaking and looking at it because we tend to not have a challenge getting people from the street into our seats, but it's uniquely Vegas to keep them engaged, get them into community.
Right.
And so we're literally almost to the point of making my head spin, re-engineering that process as we look at what's effective and what's not.
Yeah.
And so, for example, I'll give you an example.
Yes, exactly.
Our first step environment that most churches have, you know, meet the pastor, pie with the pastor, do this. We call it Discover. And we re-engineered it about a year ago to basically encompass two things. One is our six core values. What are our six core values as a church? And then we literally take people on a tour of our campus, not so that they can see our campus necessarily, but they experience a brief presentation at each of those stops
that's
coordinated with each of our values. And so it's quickly moving, it's fast moving, it's 10 minutes at each stop, and we feed them all along the way. And what we found is our people just aren't into an hour and a half classroom environment.
Right.
And we, in just to be candid, we put our top communicators at those spots. I think the mistake a lot of churches make is they'll do a next step, and they'll take their tier two communicators and put them in a back room and they'll lecture people for an hour and then wonder why people don't come back. And so we re-engineered it to put the people that people see that they want to hear from in that environment. So that would be just a brief example.
Yeah, that's cool. How often do you do that? Is that like a monthly thing or what is that?
We're religious about it.
Yes.
So we do it the first Sunday, excuse me, the first Sunday of every month.
Yep.
And then we use our Easter. We used to do Easter. So we're recording this right after Easter. We used to do the typical thing, you know, sexy series after Easter, pray to God that everybody who came at Easter comes back. And we found limited success with that.
Yep.
So what we've done over the last couple of years is emphasize our Discover environment, i.e., let us buy you lunch, meet the pastor, and that has become our big post-Easter push rather than necessarily a series. And we've seen some healthy success out of that, getting people to come back and have a conversation with us.
I love the, you know, we live in an increasingly ADD culture, and I love that idea of touring around because there's a little bit of like, and you know, you're mixing both great communicators and a short time frame, 10 minutes at six different stops. That's a high energy hour and a half. You know, you're not, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, moss grown on people in that environment for sure.
There's not. Even our communicators at each spot get frustrated because as the little tour guides are waving at them like, you're done, and they're thinking, I need 10 more minutes. And so one of our biggest challenges has just been to get those guys into that format.
Very cool.
Been good, though.
Yeah, that is neat. I like that. That's really cool. Can we look back on the, you know, you had talked about your own role and even, you know, you find yourself wandering the halls and trying to point people towards the culture. What are some other things you're doing around kind of the internal kind of staff culture, community culture stuff that is helping ensure that you keep people aligned? I think that's a real issue as churches grow beyond 2000. How do we keep the staff particularly focused in the right direction?
I agree, especially with the reality of a lot of turnover on a staff as it gets larger, even in some of the more secondary roles, administrative roles or those roles, there tends to be turnover. So we've had to make a intentional commitment to getting those people on board with our culture. So we use a lot of growth tools. We have a lot of things that we use and constructs that we'll use constantly to evaluate where we are. And so what we've done is made a commitment to actually bringing those individuals into those conversations on a regular basis, even if they're a receptionist in their role. We want them to understand. One of the things we say a lot is language creates culture. And so we want people to understand our particular language and to be able to actually regurgitate it back so that the culture is created. And so we do that from day one intentionally. And I also do a meeting that kind of started. A lot of my meetings actually start because I start ranting about something and form a meeting, and then it takes off and becomes part of our structure. So our team is uniquely structured in that we have a executive pastor who leads out operations, which would be finance, HR, those things. And then we have my role, which is all the ministry and also making our weekends happen. And so I literally meet with that team every Monday morning at 9 a.m. And we have a really creative name for it. We call it the Monday morning meeting. And the reason that happened is because, again, it just kind of happened spontaneously and then became sort of a milestone. And that meeting happens every Monday and without fail. And it is not a staff meeting, and it is not a, hey, somebody left the door unlocked last week gripe meeting. It is strictly a culture meeting where a number of things will happen. We will celebrate. We will at times discuss articles, podcasts like yours, where we'll listen. Frequently, we're reading through books. We're about ready to start reading The Power of a Moment by the Heath
and Brothers. That's a great book.
And we'll discuss that together. And so we've worked really hard to make that meeting a culture meeting, not a business meeting. And it's
Who's that with? That's with the entire, all 50 staff? No, that's with the smaller
everybody
group.
On my side of the org chart. Okay, so it's probably can be anywhere from 30 to 35, including any residents, interns, anybody who would fall in that direct report line. And I talk to most of them, and I don't think they're just saying this to me. It has become their favorite gathering of the week. And it happens right out of our Sunday. We hold it right to 45 minutes to an hour, and some of the conversation is great. And so if there's things that I need to remind them of, you know, hey, here's our engagement funnel. Here's the steps we're trying to move people through. About every 3 or 4 months, I may throw that up on the wall and just go, hey, let's walk through this together. Or let's unpack a core value items like that.
Oh, so the thing I want to just highlight for listeners is how regular you're doing that every Monday. That's significant. You know, I think this area, it can be the kind of thing that we can just let go by the wayside and be like, oh, let's do it quarterly. Let's do it, you know, once every 6 weeks. But the fact that you're on top of that time in, time out, and you're, you know, you're kind of constraining it to that kind of 45 minutes to an hour so that it kind of kickstarts people's weeks. And you can always come back to more stuff next week. It's not like you're trying to do everything. You're trying to do one thing. You know, in which one, in one of those. That's great. Love that.
Yeah. And it's, and again, honestly, there's weeks where you walk in and I'm like, I have no idea what we're doing today. You know, so there are those weeks where it just, where it's very casual, but mostly there's a lot of intentionality behind it. And I've encouraged a lot of guys that I've talked to figure out what rhythm works for them in that sense. But I think, unfortunately, we wonder why our culture starts to crumble. And yet we think, we meet once a month and we walk through a bunch of agenda items. And I think the larger you get as a team and as a church, the more intentionality somebody needs to have towards culture. It's sort of that first, second, third generational concept, right? That Harvard Business Review talks about. It's like when you add new staff, that same reality comes in. Is you have staff that are first generation that fought the battles and raised money and built buildings and dealt with all that. And then you have people that walk in and go, wow, this is great.
This is a great place to work.
This is a great place. And so you have to kind of begin to walk them back through not only what were those first generational moments, but also challenge them to, for us as a team, to create new first generational moments that lock us in. You kind of restarting that first generation over and over again. And that meeting serves to that end, for sure.
Now, is there any other, maybe one other thing that kind of pops to mind when you think about the culture thing, how you're keeping that in front of folks as a part of, you know, as a part of the church?
I think one of the things that is important for us that's a constant when it comes to culture is making sure that we collaborate. And it's a cliche, but I think if you are intentionally inviting people into a collaborative environment, so one of our core values as a staff, so we have six over here and then we have three. I don't even think I can remember them all, Rich, but one of them is the idea of we live in the tension.
Right.
So as a team, we say we're going to live in the tension, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of stealing from Andy Stanley. Mm-hmm. So when we have all of our operational people and all our creative people over here, that right off the bat, we're going, that's always going to be a tension.
Yeah.
Creative people are always going to want to do something crazy. Mm-hmm. Operational people are always going to want to look at the books and balance sheets. Mm-hmm. And we need to respect and use organizational empathy in that moment.
Totally.
And so I'm constantly coming back to going, you know what, this is a tension and we're okay with it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to work back and forward. We've used all kinds of personality stuff too, like everybody does. And you've discussed on this podcast. Mm-hmm. We've simplified it down to the thinking wavelengths that Patterson and Stratop guys use. And we use that a lot and just going, hey, what's your thinking wavelength?
Right.
And if you're having a conversation with somebody, just understand where they're coming from.
Right.
If they're a task person and they're a three, and you're a nine and you're just blowing and going.
Right.
You can work together, but you just have to understand that's the perspective you're going to come at solving problems and being innovative in what you're doing.
Right.
So I think that's cultural too. Mm-hmm. I think that contributes to a healthy culture for sure.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, I know for many people from around the country, October 1st, maybe a day that, you know, doesn't resonate as well in their heads, but obviously last year on October 1st, Vegas was struck with a incredible, you know, the mass shooting that happened in your backyard. I wonder, and I saw a little bit online about how your church responded and you know, what that kind of looked like. I'm wondering if, you know, you'd be okay with talking a little bit about that from your perspective. It's one of those things that, again, I'm hoping we talked about this earlier, I'm hoping most people don't ever have to apply any of this, but I think it could be helpful for leaders to think through when, you know, obviously, you know, such an incredible event happened there. What were some of your early responses? What were some of your lessons learned from that experience? How did you respond? What did that look like?
Yeah, it was obviously ground that we had not walked before.
Yeah.
So the event actually took place on a Sunday evening, late on Sunday evening. So throughout that evening, you know, text messages, phone by the bed, things like that started to come in. But none of us, I think, had a full measure of what had taken place until that morning. And so I'll just walk you through a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. We gathered our team, obviously, immediately and said, okay, we need, obviously, anything that's been on the agenda or anything that was planned is now put on the back burner, and we're full court pressing towards this. We immediately started having conversations around, one, you know, where can we assist? Mm-hmm. Two, how do we minister and provide a place of peace for not only our people, but people in the community who would be seeking that? Mm-hmm. And then three, you know, what is our response publicly going to be, which I think is also appropriate. Mm-hmm. And so we began to do that. We ended up learning a few things that I've shared with others in other parts of our country, unfortunately, who have experienced since then similar tragedies. Mm-hmm. One of the key learnings that we had is you almost have to set aside some philosophy right off the bat. So I'll give you an example of that. So, you know, when it comes to help, when it comes to distributing help to people, when it comes to who do we partner within our community and how do we distribute that? You know, we want to be very strategic about that. We want to say, where is the best place to help?
Right.
But what we found is in those moments, people just want to have something to do.
Right.
And they need you to help them do that. And so it's literally taking water and delivering it to a fire station. They right. need to, they need that for their heart. Mm. And so even though we would go, well, is that really needed? Why would we do that? Mm-hmm. You have to almost set all of that aside at that moment. Mm. And it actually took us about 24 hours to realize that. Mm. And I remember on Tuesday afternoon calling our kind of our missions mm-hmm. Community team together and going, guys, I need you to execute now.
Right.
Just find everything we can do, because we had people calling and coming to the church and saying, what can I do?
Right.
And so that turned into, you know, feeding hospital staffs, hundreds of people, going to fire stations and police departments and those sorts of things. So that was a key learning that I've shared with others, is your people are going to want to engage.
Right.
Be prepared to help them do that, because, again, it's not strategic. It's emotional. It's spiritual for them to be able to do that.
Hmm. That's so interesting. I imagine that, you know, that because of the unique texture of your town, and again, I don't want to overstate that. All of our communities are, you know, have their own uniqueness. But that particular tragedy had this interesting texture where obviously there were people from Las Vegas that were killed in the shooting. And so there's that kind of immediate people in the community, the friends of friends. You know, I ministered for years in New Jersey, and there, you know, 10 years after 9/11, it was still very raw because of that. It was not where I'm not from that region. And so I know kind of, you know, after a few years, it's not that the country moved on, but you kind of do, but it has, that date has resonance there because of the proximity. But then the other piece of it with Las Vegas is a lot of these people weren't from that area.
That's correct.
Away. And so, you know, I would imagine it's ministering to people who work in the hospitality industry, ministering to them now feeling very unsafe when they go to work. Can you speak to some of those dynamics? What did that look like for, you know, as you worked with people?
Yeah, we only had one young lady who was actually shot and injured in the shooting itself. We had a number of individuals in our church who were there that evening. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people in the community were there. But as you stated, I don't know the exact number, but there was a small percentage who were literally Vegas residents who were impacted by that. So, yes, the ministry was more, our community went very dark, you know, and in some ways, the bright side of that event was Vegas can be very can be kind of broken and can be a little bit not together. And so there was, it's easy to say togetherness happened, but we really saw our community come together. The interesting thing about the location of the shooting, which can't be understated in Vegas, is that you can see the Mandalay Bay from my office.
Right.
So I'm literally in my office on Monday organizing my team, and we're literally looking out the window going,
wow,
there it is. So it's still there. So you're seeing it throughout your normal day. It's not something that you put past you. You're constantly reminded of that.
And
so, you know, holistically, we're having to deal with it. We actually made a decision to not do a vigil for 48 hours. We had an interesting thing happen. We had already scheduled to have Matt Redman and his group come in for a night of worship that we do quarterly on a Wednesday night. And so this had already been scheduled for months to happen that Wednesday night. So suddenly we're going, on a practical sense, what do we do with that? And through a series of conversations, Matt very graciously and his team said, hey, we're there. And so we ended up having thousands upon thousands of people in the community come on Wednesday, have a chance to do a vigil with Matt there, ministering to them through his music. And he was so gracious, because we basically said, Matt, we want you to come, but this is our thing now.
So, yes.
You know, and those, they're not used to that. And they were like, we need to run this thing now, because it's our community. If you'd like to come, then we'd love that. And he graciously did. But what we saw is just thousands and thousands of people. So my other learning, and again, everyone would have to deal with it tragically in their own community. But I think sometimes there can be a rush to respond. And we felt that rush, you know, man, we should be doing something right now in 6 hours.
Right.
And I'm not sure we would decide the same again. And I know Matt coming probably impacted that. But we were so grateful that we had those days, and it allowed us to sort of rally people 2 days later to gather. And I think in some ways it was more impactful than if we would have just
pulled something together,
thrown something together there. And then we went ahead and started pointing some of our service, our normal service items. We kind of created this Heal Las Vegas campaign mm-hmm. within that for the rest of the year. So we did some other things. We had the Rock and Roll Las Vegas Marathon that happened about a month later, mm-hmm. people running in those shirts, serving mm-hmm. in those shirts. So we used the next 6 to 8 weeks mm-hmm. as kind of a thing. One of the conversations we had mm-hmm. that would be helpful to Rich is, when are people ready to move on?
Yep.
And as you said, like 9/11, it's different mm-hmm. everywhere. We kind of let people decide.
Right.
So we sort of said, you know what, we're not going to move on until we know that people have not moved on, but moved forward.
Yep.
And so it was probably Christmas, which right. was sort of a natural point
right.
where people finally were like, it wasn't something that was on the forefront of their mind yep. all the time. And we were able to go through some weekends without having to wrestle with it.
Yeah. That was going to be my question about kind of, you know, we're coming up to the 1 year anniversary. Do you think you guys will do something, do you think you'll let it roll? How are you guys thinking about that? You know, as you're, you know, obviously we're a ways away from that, but still, you know, you're thinking about that.
Yeah. We actually had a gathering about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So, just a quick team that came together and said, what do we need to do for the 1 year? And right now the plan is for us to do actually a prayer walk through mm-hmm. our city.
Oh, that's cool.
It won't really be a walk. It'll be more of a prayer drive, mm-hmm. but to have people visit 6 or 7 key locations in Las Vegas mm-hmm. with some guided prayer. And then one of them will be a service opportunity at the end. Mm-hmm. And so we've decided That's to cool. kind of put it in people's hands, mm-hmm. kind of individualize it, let them experience it with their families, small kids.
Yep.
And so, you know, they may go to the Las Vegas sign, the famous mm-hmm. Las Vegas mm-hmm. sign, mm-hmm. and pause there and pray. So right now that's our strategy 5 or 6 months out,
yeah.
but we will definitely obviously acknowledge it because of the impact it continues to have in our yeah, city.
Absolutely. That's interesting. Well, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate yep. you leaning in. Is there anything else you want to share before we move on with the rest of the episode?
I think I'm good. I think you've heard enough, Rich.
Okay. Great. Today we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show. Today we've got Lee Cote on the show. Super excited to have him with us. He's a great leader from The Crossing in Las Vegas. Lee, what is an online resource you're using these days that's helping you in your ministry?
We're using one of the key ones that even circling back to our culture conversation that we mm-hmm. kicked off with that I know many churches are using is the 15.5 software. And we've been using that for a couple years and have actually pretty much eliminated employee reviews mm-hmm. Because of the power of it. And yeah. so one of the things we're doing is just using that on a monthly basis, mm-hmm. once a month. We're using it. We found that that's about the right rhythm for our team to mm-hmm. actually give thoughtful, effective answers.
Yep.
And so one of my roles is really to oversee that mm-hmm. and also just make sure that our people in supervisory roles are actually responding, because mm-hmm. the power of it is only as much as people actually interact with it.
Yeah.
We love it and would encourage people who are looking for, how do I get feedback? Mm-hmm. How do I help my team better? How do I give them a platform to be candid with me mm-hmm. about where they may be struggling? Or mm-hmm. some of the greatest questions are like, what's a conversation you need to have in the next week that I can help you with?
Right.
And I love that, right? Yes. So I can step in and help them. So we're using the 15.5 pretty effectively.
For folks that don't know, we use it as well. Yeah. It's an incredible tool. For folks that don't know, it's called 15.5 because it's basically a survey, an automated survey system that it sends an email to everybody on your team, and they're supposed to take 15 minutes to kind of fill it out. And then as a supervisor, it takes 5 minutes to review. And the genius of it is it's asking people on a whatever schedule you set, weekly, you know, biweekly, monthly, and you can get good feedback across the entire organization. And it drives, the thing I love is exactly what you said, is it pushes information up. It creates a consistent place where people know, hey, if I want to say something, I know it'll get its way back up to the system.
It's amazing. It allows you even to create teams, which is something we've worked through, so that even some of our administrative staff will get different questions
yep.
than our pastoral team. And so it allows it to sort of customize towards what their role is or mm-hmm. what are the things that they may need some feedback on. So yes, I think it's great.
It's a great tool. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that's impacting your shape or shaping your thinking or ministry?
I'm kind of a book hoarder, so it's a little bit of a problem for me. And now I've discovered Audible. Because I do a lot of traveling and consulting with churches as well. You know, it's like I'm listening to books all the time. Mm-hmm. And so a couple books, you know, The Unhurried Leader was really effective book for me. And then I mentioned it earlier. I'm right in the middle of reading The Power of a Moment. I think I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of rocking my world, even though it has absolutely nothing specifically to do with church. But it really is dealing with how do we create moments that actually are monumental and memorable for people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what we do in Kingdom Work is that. Mm-hmm. And so I've been reading that and would highly recommend it to everybody, especially those that may be responsible for even formulating weekend experiences, to look at, okay, what are we creating and what are we leaving people with? So again, it's the Heath Brothers, and I'm in the middle of that right now. And
yeah, I'm reading that as well right now too. And it's, I've thought the same thing. I think the thing I've been saying to a few people is like, I think by the time I get to the end of it, it's going to end up on my must read list. It's got some great insight, particularly
really
for
good stuff.
Definitely. What's another ministry you're looking at that's shaping your thinking or ministry? It's kind of inspiring you. You're like, hey, those are cool people.
A lot of cool people. I listen to the Unseminary podcast.
Oh gosh.
There you go, Rich.
Oh no. Got to send you $20 now.
That's right. You know, recently we've been looking deeper into our engagement funnel. We feel like we've done really well at the top. Mm-hmm. And as churches scale, some of that middle stuff, you know, moving people into groups and serving and the things that we do, we've had less effective results from there. And so we're at the moment, we've kind of become a student of what Mariners is doing with their Rooted.
Yep.
And you know, you have a lot of growth track churches now, and you have a lot of Rooted type churches. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of both, but we're looking at really starting to integrate that Rooted as our deeper step after Discover, but down into where we will push people. And so we've been doing a lot, spent some time with their team, with Kenton, and kind of looking at what is their strategy there. And so over the next year, which is really odd for us, we're usually like next week. Over the next year, we have a process in place that will roll that out for us. And so we've been looking at them as well as somebody that we admire in what they're doing and love what they're doing in their depth. And then obviously a lot of the other churches that people take cues from. But for us specifically looking at how do we get deeper engagement and connection with people, that's where we're at right now.
That's very cool. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Wow. So I think it would be interesting to sit down with Obama now, you know,
that's true.
As he's had a, you know, a year and a half and everything, wherever you are on that spectrum that we are navigating, even wherever you were with him when he was in office.
Yeah, right.
I look back and I go, okay, that was an interesting time. He was the first of a lot of things.
Yep.
And I would love to have a conversation with him about how he, even the idea of how do you become a little bit invisible when you probably wish you couldn't have to,
right?
You know, and how does secession happen?
Yeah.
Right. How do you lead at such a heavy level? And then within 5 minutes, you no longer are that leader.
Yes.
How do you navigate a lot of criticism?
Yep.
And a lot of just stuff, right?
Right.
That he had to navigate. That some that had to do with policies that's valid, and some that just had to do with personality.
Yep.
And so I would love to just sit down now and get some insight from him from hindsight of what he's learned now. And so I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, you never know. I don't know if you're a Netflix fan, but Obama's interview by David Letterman. Did you see it? I thought that was so great. I thought it was interesting. My reflection on that was like, it's interesting to see him more relaxed because it's like, hey, I'm no longer the president. Like, here I am, you know, and it was interesting to see, you know, it's an interesting leader for sure. That's cool.
Yep.
I know being executive pastor in a growing church like yours and a large church takes a lot out of you. What do you do in your personal life just to kind of relax, kick back, you know, have some fun?
I'm kind of that guy that's pretty intense in both ways. So people see the intensity from the execution and think, man, you really need to get, you know, rest and balance. But I'm actually pretty intense on the other side.
Right.
And so over the last few years, I've started to run, people ask me like, hey, I'm going to start running. And I say, no, you probably shouldn't do that. it becomes kind of this thing. And so so that's become an escape. to run and to read and to travel. My wife and I recently became empty nesters. And so we've kind of taken the running as a travel. So we'll go this year to Chicago and New York and San Francisco and run some of those large races. And it becomes a vacation alongside running 26.2 miles. And so that's become a real thing for us. And I really enjoy working with other churches.
Right.
And so I've been given, because of experience and time, I've been given the opportunity to do that. And it, that is not a job for me. And I know you feel the same way, Rich. It's refreshing and replenishing to sit alongside other teams and to give whatever nuggets of wisdom and direction I can give them. So that's become part of my replenishment cycle in my life plan. Yeah. You know, what do I need to do to replenish? And so I run and I try to help other people accomplish what they want to accomplish. And it's great. I love it.
Nice. That's cool. Well, if people want to get in touch with you, even on that, they might say, hey, I'd love to have Lee connect with him. You know, I'd like to help replenish Lee. You know, how can they get in touch with you?
We can go on a run together.
Yeah, exactly. Or the church. How can they get in touch with you?
I think the best way is for them to just email me. They can email me at my Crossing email, and I'll give it to you. It's lee@thecrossinglv.com. Nice. And I'd love to just – I'm one of those guys that has about 40 text conversations happening all at the same time with people all over the place.
Yes.
And I love it. So if anybody would love to reach out with me, they can start with email and go from there.
Great. Thanks so much, Lee. Really appreciate you being on the show today. Appreciate what your church is doing. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.